Welcome back to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast and part two, Palooza. This is the last installment of the second halves of the second half of season two. I hope you've been enjoying this maneuvering around time and place to learn history through pop culture. I spoke with Dr. Kitty Oliver about her experience seeing the Beatles in 1964 and how it changed her entire life. Part one of In My Life was published on April 27th of this year. Kitty's story could be about the power of radio just as much as it is about the music the stations played. Without the wide reach of such stations as WAPE, The Ape, who boasted to be as powerful as any station in the nation, new sounds would not have been relayed from across the country, or in the case of the Beatles, from across the world. The musically inclined listeners drew ideas on what they too could create themselves from the radio, which then progressed rock and roll and other forms of pop music even further. And in the tradition of arts reflecting reality and reality reflecting art, these same radio stations became the literal beacon for social change as well. The music may not have always come out and encouraged action, but the rawness of rock and roll, folk, and soul music spoke to the youth of America and motivated them. Dr. Kitty Oliver would not have had the life she has lived without the Beatles playing to Jacksonville in September of 1960. And now, part two of the interview. You know, because it's like, I'm lamenting to, I think it was my wife the other day or somebody, it must have been my wife because we were talking about it was just music in general. Like in recent years, especially rock and roll, I haven't been moved by much rock and roll. It's been kind of a rough 20 some years for rock and roll. The greatest period of time in music is the 60s. In rock and roll, in soul, in, you know, R&B, it's the 60s. That is the greatest time for pop music ever. And it's just like a back and forth reflection of the social movement of the same era. You know, they're responding to it, the social movement's responding to it, and it's just like this nice trading back and forth throughout the entire decade. And I'm just glad that my parents were so into music because then I got to on the receiving end. And I, to be honest with you, I never was one of those kids that are like, I don't like my parents like, because I did like it. You know, it was like, this is good. I love the Beatles. This is cool. You know, I never got tired of it.
Well, you're better than my kids. Okay. Like, oh, you're playing that again. And when I was in the documentary, they said, well, yeah, you played the Beatles for us. I know we heard it. But both of my kids, and especially our son, is very much into music and has listened to a lot. But I like this concept we're talking about of the music of the 60s being an anchoring.
Yeah.
That we, no matter what generation or race or cultural background, it was an era that we can kind of come back to find something that we need or that resonates with us at the time.
Yeah.
And it's different from nostalgia because I grew up also, my father was a big jazz fan. So I first heard, I think, Miles Davis from him. But I also heard the old crooners, and I love standards. So jazz standards, and listening to Nancy Wilson and to Sarah Vaughan, and, you know, and by way of that, even listening to Frank Sinatra and the other crooners and Tony Bennett. So I had that as part of my influence, as well as the black radio station. But within the rock and roll era there, I was able to hear some of all of that. You know, singer-songwriter Troubadours gave me some of that. And Bonnie Raitt, let's say, you know, I still love her, you know, got introduced to her. And then she plays with other blues musicians, and I learn about them. So I'm still learning with them when I come back to those familiar artists. and those familiar songs. I'm still hearing the songs by other performers, and it stays fresh.
And music is just so powerful because I feel like the other forms of entertainment always rely on the music. You know, you can't have a movie without a soundtrack is just unwatchable. You know, TV uses it all the time. And, you know, even, and you're so right about that as far as it's not nostalgia, because if you're listening, it might make you nostalgic hearing a song from your youth, but exploring the catalog of music from any particular time period, even your own time, even your own lifetime, is like, that's not really nostalgia. It's almost like heritage, I guess, like doing like almost genealogical work. It's like, this is the music of my youth or of my teenage years or my, you know, young adulthood moving, you know, upward. And, you know, it's incredibly powerful like that. I would say TV of the 60s did have similar messages, but it was a lot more coded. Like they didn't, it wasn't as obvious to see, you know. They would have like, I like to watch old episodes of the Munsters, and there is quite a bit in there about bigotry and prejudice and, without them even saying anything about it. I know there's like a famous monologue from Herman Munster talking about, you know, racism and things, but just as a general storyline, you know, they are treated like everybody's terrified of them because they look different from everybody else, even though they're like the nicest people. You know, nobody wants to even get to know that because they're just so used to the, you know, this is what you do in America. You know, everybody is, you know, follows the same pattern. And if you are different from that pattern, then you're shunned, you know. So it's there. It's there in the Munsters. It's there in Star Trek. It's there in even, you know, so many of these shows. And but because the TV, it does take a lot more time. You got to get it written, and there's a lot more censorship of television, self-censorship of television, especially in that time period. It doesn't show up nearly as much. So it's like music was the place to be. Now, besides the Beatles, would you say there was any other music moments in that span of time in the 60s that was like, you're like, I was just so glad to be there to experience that?
Other than the Beatles concert, I don't think I ever went to another concert until the later 70s, with the exception of a couple of outdoor festivals in order to hit Santana and Sly and the Family Stone.
And those are perfect products of their era too. Yeah, that's right. A good example of where music kind of evolved into by the late 60s, early 70s.
Right, and absolutely. With Sly and the Family Stone, it was that crossing over, you know, having the integrated band experience and the presentation of difference and flamboyance and but seriousness, but also a fun, you know, a joyful expression of it. I really enjoyed that, and Santana with the intensity and that Latin expression.
Yeah. And it all blends. It goes back though to the radio. You know, because, and I was just talking to somebody a few weeks ago about this, because we did an episode about Buddy Holly and how Buddy Holly, you know, he's early, mid-50s, so he's in Texas, but late at night, and this is just the way nature works, is that when it gets colder out, radio waves can go farther. So he was able to pick up from Lubbock, Texas, radio signals all the way from Louisiana. And so he was hearing the blues stations from Louisiana, because up in Texas, all he was getting was country Western stuff. But from Louisiana, he was getting the blues music that he wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And I've heard that same kind of story in so many other different parts of the country where, and like you said earlier, it's like, I wouldn't have been able to hear that music had it not been for the power of these certain stations of being able to get it out there. And it's like these radio stations are almost like embassies in a way of, you know, like all scattered around the country of different kinds of music that you wouldn't hear otherwise, right? If you, you know, because like if you're in the Southwest or, you know, you can go to a live, you know, a bar would have country Western music, or, you know, up here in New England, I don't really think we're known for any kind of music other than, you know, a sea shanty or something. I don't know. But that kind of stuff, you know, it wouldn't be, that would be local. But the radio stations, the power of radio is able to, you know, bring you stuff that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And then that gets absorbed. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, just becomes, you know, part of what you then on your own produce on the other side.
But I think also, you know, we're fortunate, those of us who see music in that way, because for a lot of people, you know, they have a certain kind of music they listen to, but also a certain era they identify their music appreciation with, you know, and so music is more in boxes for them.
Yeah.
And so if you, you know, just in my case, if I talk out of the black box to Bonnie Raitt or some other artists I may like, they'll go, what? And that's the way it was with the Beatles when I had this one friend, and she and I, you know, liked the music and we talk about it, but she didn't want to go to a concert. She, you know, she wouldn't have gone that far. And, you know, it just wasn't something I could talk about with other friends during that period because it was too far removed from anything. Mm-hmm. They were experiencing. So I enjoy that. It's a gift people have when you see music as this broad field that you can enjoy as opposed to in one little narrow box.
It's kind of like when somebody has a large book collection. You know, they have like more books than they'll ever be able to read in their life. And it's just like in their house, every corner of the house has books, and same kind of thing. It's like, and you know, and I live in one of those houses where every room has like all these books everywhere. Where I'm sitting right now, I'm looking around, there's books, and I'm never going to read all of these, but I just like having them. You know, like I'll never turn a book down, and I'll never turn a record down. I'll never turn, like, if somebody's giving away free CDs, I'll grab them up. And like, I'm the last person as a CD player, you know, just like, and I know that I inherited that from my parents. And like I said, they were of that, you know, my mom was born 1949. My dad was born 1948. And so they, you know, were teenagers by the 60s. And I remember their record collection going through it and find. And then like 2 summers ago was their 50th wedding anniversary. And so my brother and I, you know, we organized the reception, you know, after they renewed their vows and everything. And we were coming up with a playlist of music for the dancing part or just to have on in the background. And it was like endless supply. We just like we were we were removed by a couple of different states. So he's over in New York and I'm here in New Hampshire and we're both building the same Spotify list. And in some ways, I almost felt like we were trying to one-up each other, be like, well, I know my parents like this song, or, you know, I like this one too. And I'll just put that little deep cut in there and we'll put, and next thing we know, it was like, we ended up with like a 7-hour playlist. We were only going to be like listening to it for like an hour and a half, but it was like, just kept going on and on and on because that was them. Like that is them. They still love, you know, listening to all sorts of music, and they just had their minds opened. I know they did in the 60s. It was just like, you know, here is, you know, because I think everybody's kind of participated in that in some way, especially when you're a teenager and you, you know, feel like, I don't, that music's, you know, I don't like that. It's, you know, but ultimately, if you just kind of like let anything in your ears, it just broadens everything. So actually, before we wrap things up, I just wanted to, you know, tell you about the song. You shared me the music video that you made recently, and that is really, really good. What I like the most about that song is the message is not delivered the same way that you used to, right? So if you don't mind, could you just tell us a little bit about how what inspired you to write the song and you know, make it the way that it is?
The song we're talking about is entitled Don't Put Your Dreams Away, and it's on my CD of original music I called Inspirational Jazz, for lack of a better term. The CD is called The Calling of Our Time. And Don't Put Your Dreams Away was just realizing that there is a common thread that runs through us throughout our different stages of life, of this reaching for something more, and whether it's for young people, of having the imagination of things so much being possible, or older people as they get older, finding causes and issues and things that they hold dear and they really want to fight for and work on. And then those of us as we get into later years still desiring to be a positive influence on the world and on people that we meet. But at the same time, we always have these little forces trying to pull us down, saying, no, young people, no, don't dream. No, don't imagine big, because that can't happen. Or no, don't dream, because look how bad things are and how they don't work. Or when you're older, no, forget, you're useful. You don't have use now, and all that. So that's where the lyrics came of saying, yes, you can have your imagination, it can be as big as you want. And yes, people are going to tell you that you shouldn't do it, and maybe, you know, it won't work out and all, but keep that. Yeah. Yes, you can dream that things will change, even if our situation right now looks dire and all that, but things do change if you hold on and keep that dream. And when you're older, yes, there are a lot of reasons for you to feel like life is over and there's just nothing for you. But you wake up each morning and you can have a sense of joy and not give that away, not let what's going on take your joy. So that's how the song developed as a musical piece on CD. Mm-hmm. And then I found this young lady who's a dancer, and I asked her to choreograph something to go with that. She's in her 20s now, to go with that. So the music video became this juxtaposition of the dancer and me as I sing the lyrics through the different stages, and just that reminder, no matter what stage of life you're at, you know, we kind of move together in our own way.
Yeah, because and that's why I think the song is particularly powerful, because I've been kind of bothered recently by this message that seems to come out, and people bring it up at weird times, like graduation ceremonies and stuff, of feeling like telling kids you're not special, right? Don't think of yourself as being better or, you know, or unique, or, you know, and I think what they're trying to get at is the sense of entitlement that some people have. Which I kind of get, like, you know, the whole, you know, everybody gets a participation badge or, you know, a trophy for, you know, just, I can see in some ways where that coming from, but I don't like that message overall of telling people don't dream, you know, like just expect to be in the same, because, and I think that's what makes your song very powerful, is that it's a real message. It's like, you know, hold these dreams. The time for them to really, you know, become reality will show up, right? It will be there. It might not be today. It might not be tomorrow. It might not even be this year. But if you continue, if you hold them, the moment, the right time will come. You know, just have that optimism, have that hope, have that faith. And so it's just like, and if you don't mind me saying, I think that that message and your delivery of it and the way that you did it is a product of your entire life, right? I mean, would you say that that's kind of like exactly where it came from?
Oh, I think it definitely is, because who I through movies and television and music that I heard when I was young, it helped me to have wings of seeing possibilities so far beyond what I was living, you know, and that was the only way I think that I was able to move out of that environment, because somehow I saw it, possibilities of something beyond where I was. And then the dreams, I wanted to change the world like so many other people, and I've gotten my head knocked against the wall and continue to have it, and I despair and want to pull the covers over my head. But the intention I have is to keep working toward it. And there's a commitment to doing that, of doing the work. And I just need to find things to keep me resilient so I can stay hopeful. And that's what the video, you know, the words in the video say too. And now at this stage of life, so many of my boomer friends are in that despairing state of, oh, so much we had hoped would happen, and we had so many dreams and all that, and they haven't come to pass. But I'm a product of the change, so yeah. I can't really despair that way, because I've seen change. I know we change.
Yeah.
Now, if you're looking for it to be so revolutionary that we all wake up and everything is perfect, that's never going to happen.
Right.
I hate to tell you.
That's
what
not...
I tell my younger friends and all. No, as long as we're here in the world, we're going to have difficulties to deal with and struggles and all that. But how we deal with them is what we have the choice over, which is what you're saying. How we deal with them and how we keep our enthusiasm and we keep working at it and we keep our dreams and our joy.
Yeah.
And the joy of it, to me, is the most important part. To work with a sense of hope, you know, and that's what music has always been able to give us.
It's
We've been
absolutely
able
true.
To find that sense of hope, you know.
Absolutely.
Even if it was at the Stone say, just why don't we do it in the road?
know? It's hopeful. Yeah, and speaking of joy, it's been a joy talking to you. And where can folks learn more about what you do? And, you know, in other words, what's the best way to find you on the World Wide Web?
Best way to find me is at kittyoliveronline.com. You'll see the range of things I'm doing. I have a YouTube channel, Dr. Kitty Oliver, Race and Change. I'm on Facebook. There's a Race and Change Facebook page, and Dr. Kitty Oliver on Instagram, Race and Change. But there are resources available. There's music, there are videos, there are radio programs and interviews with younger people about race and ethnic relations. Anything that can help us to continue sharing history, continue sharing our stories, and be reminded that it's a wonderful journey.
I can give you some more hope and optimism that my students who watched and went through the entire, I hope my entire class, but that particular unit with the civil rights, and as we learned about, the approach I take through music and everything, that they seem very inspired and eyes wide open, just loving it and stuff. So, but it, you know, as far as your conversations that you have with young people, that's podcast-esque, right? Like you have them sit around, just kind of share ideas and topics and things, and record it, correct?
Well, this was a project that I did
okay.
and completed, but it was 58 programs that were developed, letting the young people tell their story.
Okay.
I would ask them some questions, but it had to do with how they were dealing with differences and what they had learned. And So that Voices of Race and Change, the younger generation, is what we focused on. Now I do intergenerational chats sometimes with the presentations when I travel and do events, and I'll bring in a person from a younger generation, and we'll have a little conversation about what we understand and don't understand and have in common across generations. And the other thing I'd like to unveil with you that I'm starting on, I'm interested in supporting those, the idea of people like me, younger people who are stepping out of their environment, racially, culturally, or whatever, and building bridges by giving what I've called the Agents of Race and Change Award. I actually began starting just before the pandemic hit. I'd started to look for nominations of people who had seen young people acting in this way and wanting to give them encouragement to say, we need you, those of you who step out of your what could be a contained environment in order to make a difference. And I did, my husband and I funded the award, and we did find the first person who we gave it to, and then the pandemic hit. But now, as we're beginning to roll in a different way, I may be back in touch with you about that. But I want to start looking for young people, and it's a monetary award and a letter of encouragement from a stranger like me of saying, hey, you've been observed moving in the world in a way that we want to support.
Well, if there's anybody that could spot that kind of quality in a young person, it would be you, because it seems like, and I can tell that you had enough experience in your own lifetime to be able to say a good judge of character and seeing similarities over the span of time. So we'll definitely be in touch more about that, because I'd love to learn how people can best go about nominating a young person for that particular award. But thank you so much for joining the show. And I just had a lovely time speaking with you. And I hope the listeners enjoyed listening. And we'll talk to you next time on the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, where everyone has a story to tell. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to these special summer episodes, and I hope loose ends were tied up nicely for you. It won't be long, about a week in fact, before season 3 starts up, and what a season we have in store. Be sure to follow the show on social media, including YouTube and especially on Instagram, where other pop culture media related to the show's topics is posted daily. Check out Everything is a Primary Source's home on the web at everything-history.com. And don't forget to like, share, rate, and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to the EPS podcast, where everything is a primary source.